with the material that we'll be addressing today. You know, it's nice to have the moderate temperatures today. You go from high of 80 to a high of 8 to right in the middle. And so that's where we are this morning. And it's wonderful to be with you to talk about this subject. The title, as you can see, a little bit different, Guiding Light to Building an Affair-Proof Marriage. And again, I would encourage you to have your Old Testament open to the Song of Songs as well as the book of Proverbs. We will be gleaning a lot from these texts, but you know, I have to ask, why preach a series on this? Let me first state that, you know, 2 weeks from today, we will be in the middle of our gospel meetings. That's how quickly it is coming up. Brett sends his loving regards to you, and we're looking forward to that. I hope that that's penciled in on your calendar to be here for every service, because as we've sung this morning, where love is in the home, there's harmony. And as we've sung this morning about Christian homes, and what is it about the family that affects a nation? You know, as the family goes, so goes the what? You fill in the blank. But what must we have? These songs are stressing the altar fires to burn within the domestic realm, to have God in the family first, to have Him direct our hearts there. And so drawing near to God automatically will have an improved mechanism in place to have the family life better. Why preach on this topic? Because marriage pertains to life. And marriage pertains to godliness. He seeks godly offspring. There is a fundamental quality regarding the family structure as God gave it that accords with life and godliness, and the Bible gives us instruction on how to enter this sacred institution and how to conduct ourselves in it. It is the family front that has a direct impact on the strength of a local congregation, on a society, as well as on our own culture as well. You know, the Bible's view of marriage is radically different from Hollywood's, as if you didn't know that. That's all right. Sounds like I hear an echo of myself. But I got to re-get my train of thought here. You know, Hollywood's view of marriage, even in The Honeymooners, if you are old enough to have watched any of those, and I wasn't alive when those came out, but you can still watch them, or All in the Family in the 70s, and all of the cast of shows that have come since then, they present marriage in a very different light than what you read in the Song of Songs. And, you know, I recall a character playing Doc Holliday who described marriage as a noose around your neck that grows tighter and tighter with each passing day and each week to where it eventually strangles you. That's not the biblical view of marriage. It is not marriage that brings agony. It is not marriage that brings disappointment. It is the lack of following the rules and understanding the purpose of marriage that brings disappointment. If you were to buy a refrigerator and treat it like an oven, you're going to be sorely disappointed with that refrigerator because it will not heat up your food. Likewise, if you try to use an oven as a refrigerator, you're going to be sorely disappointed with it. But it's because you ignore the purpose and the instructions. And so the same thing is true here with marriage. Walk with me back to this book of Proverbs in chapter 5. In Proverbs chapter 5, really 6 and 7, 5, 6, and 7, describe the idea of being on the verge of total ruin. And we have here in chapter 5, you know, this warning, and in the context of adultery, we have this warning that aliens will be filled with your wealth. Your labor will go to the house of a foreigner, verse 10. And you are mourning there in verse 11, when the flesh of your body are consumed. Your flesh and your body are consumed, and you say, how I have hated what? Instruction. And my heart despised what? Correction. I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who have instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and the congregation. They are in the assembly and in the congregation, but their life is bankrupt because they despise the instruction and the teaching that was given to them. When Solomon describes marriage here through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, he says, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be only your own. And not for strangers with you, let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Rejoice. Marriage is a place of joy. When the instructions are received and the teaching is obeyed, where love is in the home, there's what? Happiness and harmony. Live joyfully with the wife of your youth. In Psalm 119, verse 105, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. What is the light from heaven regarding the makeup of joyful marriage? I'm going to suggest to you four areas today, three in this service and two in the one in the next. And as we think about the components of a biblically joyful, harmonious marriage, sacred affection cannot be undervalued. Affection itself cannot be ridden away from it. It must be an intrinsic component to what it is that makes marriage what it is. Affection has its place. In Genesis chapter 26 and verse 8, when Abimelech was looking through his window, he saw Isaac showing endearment to his wife. He was caressing her, right? And so, you know, as we talk about this, you know, affection, what does the Apostle Paul say in the book of Ephesians in the fifth chapter? He tells the husband to love your wife. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. The concept is not just love your wife, but it is love your wife just. Not just love, but love your wife just as Christ loves. And so he sets the standard there. The apostle, as he describes this love, says that he may sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word. Underscored, he sanctifies her. What's he doing to her? He's setting her apart. That's what Jesus is doing to the church. He's setting her apart so that she can be set apart to him, that he might present to her, to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be what? Holy. That she should be set apart without blemish. He sets her apart. She sets him apart. We are holy to him. He requires that of us, right? Our God is jealous. He doesn't want our love and affection to go toward an idol. And so we are told in marriage to love our wives just as Christ loved the church. But then the apostle gives a second illustration here in chapter 5 of Ephesians, in verse 28. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies, to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. the apostle says, love your wife as you love yourself. Love your wife as you love your own body. Remember, the two become one flesh, as he talks about here in verse 31. And so, love her as you love yourself. He goes on to illustrate what this love is like. He says, no one ever hated his own flesh, but what? Notice two words, nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. What does the Lord do to the church? He nourishes it and he cherishes it. He nourishes it in that he provides for his wife, the church, all that she needs. The husband is to see that his wife is taken care of, that there is not lack or want in her life, that he has her betterment in mind. He's nurturing her. But number two, with what type of attitude? Cherishing, that's the word that is used here, a word that's found in only one other place of Scripture. You know, when the Apostle Paul worked among the brethren in Thessalonica, he uses two illustrations of how he and his comrades conducted themselves among them. One was as a mother, a nursing mother. In 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 7, but we were gentle among you as a nursing mother, and here's our word, cherishes her own children. How is a nursing mother toward her child? She is warm, comforting. This is the way the husband is supposed to be toward his wife in Ephesians 5, 28 and 29, to love her as himself. No man would have total hatred and disregard for something that pertained to the wellness of his own body, and so he must love his wife as his own body. He must nurture her, provide for her, and he must cherish her. And then the Apostle Paul also speaks here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, that he conducted himself as a father in verse 11, charging them and exhorting them. Both qualities were used in his preaching. But when we talk about loving your wife and cherishing her, this is polar opposite to what the apostle calls here bitterness. Polar opposite, bitterness. That husbands can be prone to grow bitter toward their wives is a given, or else why would he, in writing Christians, in addressing males of the church, men, warn them, do not become bitter toward them. Husbands, love your wives, and do not be bitter toward them. Do not become easily irritated or angry with them. Do not do that, is the admonition here. We are told by the Apostle Peter in 1 Peter 3, verse 7, to dwell with our wife with understanding. Bitterness is found in one other place that I know of, and that's Revelation chapter 10, verse 9 and 10, where John ate the book and it was sweet to his taste, but then what? It gave him a stomach ache. Don't have a stomach ache regarding your wife. She should be joy to you. Don't grow bitter toward her. Colossians 3, verse 19. We talk about affection. We're talking about romantic affection as well. In the Song of Songs, we looked at this a couple weeks ago where the Shulamite says in verse 2, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Because of the fragrance of your good ointments, your name is ointment poured forth. Therefore, the virgins love you. You've got a great name. You're a great person. And I desire, she says, for him to kiss me. Kissing is not gross. It's simply conveying your affection toward your spouse. She says, let him kiss me. She accepts the fact that he should initiate kissing her. That she welcomes it and desires it. Notice verse 4, draw me away. That should be there. That's a component of healthy affection. This is different, or it's set in contrast to Proverbs 7:13. Remember the woman in Proverbs chapter 7? The immoral woman, when her husband is gone, what is she seen doing? In chapter 7, verse 13, we see her catching a person. She caught him and kissed him with an impudent face. Unashamed, right? Here this woman is desiring her spouse's affection. And she calls it better than wine. Better than wine. This is not a sermon on wine, but you know the Bible does not endorse the drinking of intoxicating drink. I've taught that many, many times. Just because wine can be good doesn't mean it's intoxicating wine that's being spoken of here. The Bible makes a distinction between that which inflames an individual and that which is not intoxicant. Okay? Non-alcoholic. It makes those distinctions. One, it unreservedly condemns. The other, it equally upholds. And so the idea is of Proverbs 5:19, be enraptured with her love. She is enraptured with his love. You might also notice that he is enraptured with hers in chapter 4. He describes her love the same way. In the Song of Songs, chapter 4, verse 10, how fair is your love, verse 10, my sister, my spouse. How much better than wine is your love and the scent of your perfumes and all spices. He is enraptured with her love as well. You might notice in the Song of Songs where he refers to his spouse as his sister. This is not incestual. This is simply a term of endearment, of gentleness, of kindness, the way a brother looks at his sister and appreciates her for who she is and watches out over her. You could mark down in Proverbs chapter 7, verse 4, say to wisdom, you are my sister. Say to wisdom, you are my sister. It's looking at wisdom that way. And so a sister is always a sister, right? And we should be tender toward them as well. You know, the Bible record fully proposes sacred romance and at the same time adamantly opposes immoral lust. It just like wine that intoxicates, unreservedly condemns it, just like wine that is not, it's a blessing to man, okay? And so here it is in the scope of marriage. Marriage is honorable among all, and that bed there is undefiled. That's sacred romance. But on the outside of marriage, it is absolutely, unreservedly condemned as well. The Apostle Paul, in writing to the church at Thessalonica, gave them these words in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and he certainly encourages this congregation and many of the good things that they have, but he also reprimands them and some of the dangers that exist here within this congregation. And in chapter 4, in verse 1 of 1 Thessalonians, he says, finally then, brethren, we urge and exhort in the Lord Jesus that you should abound more and more, just as you receive from us how you ought to walk and to please God. For you know what commandments we gave you through the Lord Jesus. Do they know them? Yes. Are they to walk accordingly? Yes. What's the goal? The end game is to please God, right? Verse 3, what's a danger to that? For this is the will of God. What is this? It's the will of God. Your what? Sanctification. What does sanctification require, Paul? That you should abstain from sexual immorality. That each one should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor. The vessel here is regarding the body, that we are like a clay vase, right? That's easily broken. Designed for a purpose, to bring honor to God, separated, sanctified, set apart for Him. And so sexual immorality is dishonorable. He says in verse 5, not in passion of lust, like the Gentiles who do not know God. No one should take advantage of and defraud his brother in this matter, because the Lord is the avenger of all such, and as we also forewarned you and testified. In the church, the scope of the church is that brethren are going to be closer to one another. They're going to spend time with one another. Families are going to be drawn together who might not normally even be drawn together. But because they share a common bond in Jesus Christ, now they do spend time together. They worship together. They do other things together. But a danger of that can be where a brother or a sister begins to blur and disregard these lines that exist. And Paul is very clear that if you defraud your brother in this area, if you seek to take away what is lawfully his and his alone, God will avenge. That's what he's saying. For God did not call us to uncleanness, but in holiness. Verse 7, therefore he who rejects this does not reject man, but God who has also given us the Holy Spirit. And so there's, you know, a difference here. When it's in marriage, it's honorable. When it's outside of marriage, God will judge. Notice the three F's of the woman in Proverbs 2, verse 16 and 17. To deliver you from the immoral woman. What's her first F? From the seductress who what? Flatters with her words. Number two, who forsakes the companion of her youth. Number three, and forgets the covenant of her God. Work your way from the bottom up. When you forget the covenant of God, the rules of God, it's easy to forsake the companion of your youth and to flatter others. Right? This is a danger to marriage. It's a threat, a real living threat. On the other hand, when you look at the Shulamite, I don't have verse 10 on here, but chapter 8, verse 10, she is a wall to any other man. Boundaries are set like a wall. We have in the Song of Songs, chapter 4, verse 12, the description that her beloved gives her is that of a garden enclosed. In other words, it's a garden that is barred up. A spring that is shut. Remember in Proverbs 5, do not let your fountains be dispersed. She is a spring that is sealed up against others. Again, further describing her there in this Song of Songs, she is a fountain that is sealed. There were healthy, well-defined boundaries, is what I'm saying, between her and other men. Remember, this all accords with 1 Corinthians 7, 1-5. The husband has authority over the wife's body. The wife has authority over the husband's body. Now, there's something that stood out to me when I was studying this. In chapter 8 of the Song of Songs, of course, she's desiring to have this time with her husband, and we read in verse 2 that I would lead you and bring you into the house of my mother. And it struck me that she learned the rules of romantic affection from her parents, and specifically from her mother. Notice what she says there, or what is stated there. She who used to instruct me. It's dangerous to leave this type of education to the world. To let the world teach your children, you know, the boundaries and the makeup of love is foolish. It is the mother who's called out here. And in the New Testament, what do we read? Older women are to teach younger women to what? Love their husbands. And that's what we see here. This woman, this God-fearing mother, showed her daughter the way you love your husband. The way you treat him. And I found that very interesting as I was looking through this text. The instruction of a mother. You've got a God-fearing mother. You should be so thankful if she has taken the time to teach you these things, and we should be accessible to our children to discuss this kind of love. The Shulamite recalls her mother's instruction right there. But we must go forward. And I encourage you to read the Song of Songs. and looking into that song. It's written, you know, it's poetic and it's different than the way we talk. There are figures there that are hard to understand, but it's very applicable for us as we treat our husband or as our wife. Number two, there should be conversational companionship. You know, women like to talk. I think in our household, my wife likes to talk more than I do. But I enjoy talking with her. I enjoy listening to her. We used to, you know, drive distances, and she would just go and go and go. And I listen and listen and listen and throw out a word here and there. And I enjoy that. That's what makes the miles go away. But women and men need to enjoy communication. And these are some verses where husbands and wives are talking. And in all of these verses, just about, the wife is actually giving sound wisdom to her husband. Even Pilate's wife in Matthew 27, verse 19. We see the woman in Proverbs 31, 26, when she opens her mouth, she opens it with wisdom. And in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, husbands are called to dwell with their wives with understanding. And how else can we dwell with them with understanding if we do not have communication? It's not just companionship, but it's a companionship that is filled with conversation. Sometimes it's nonverbal. Song of Songs 4:9. You might read along as I read the New American Standard translation of this. You have made my heart beat faster, my sister, my bride. You have made my heart beat faster with a single glance of your eyes. When your eyes are for your wife only, you can get heart palpitations by a single glance. When you're enraptured with her love. But you know what? Communicating your love to one another, complimenting one another, that's a good thing, is it not? We cannot read minds. It's through the mouth that the heart is expressed. And so we should desire the company. Notice here in chapter 7, where the woman is simply desiring time with her man. I am my beloved's, and his desire is toward me. That word desire there is the same word in Genesis 3:16, where God told Eve that your desire shall be for your husband. Well, here we read, his desire is toward me. The man also desires her. And then she invites him. She says, come, my beloved, let us go forth to the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let us get up early, go to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine has budded, the grape blossoms open, the pomegranate. And talks about all that. She is desiring simply to get away. It doesn't have to be a exotic, expensive vacation. It can be simply going into the vineyard or going into a nearby village. But spending time together is the idea here. We sang a song this morning where the altar fires are glowing. That's God's rules in the home. And where the home fires are burning, it's very hard for predators to come into that environment. We'll talk about some of those predators next week. Song of Songs talks about that. But it's very difficult for a predator to work his or her way in when the home fires are alive and vibrant. Giving a little note to your spouse where they later on discover, that's not silly. Bringing flowers to your wife is not silly. These are marks of a healthy, loving relationship, and I would advise against I'll get here in just a second. I would advise against taking your sweet vacation separate from one another. I've known people do that. she gets with her friends and they go to this place far, far away. And he gets with his friends and he does his own thing. You know, I think from a biblical point of view that you are to be heirs together of the grace or favor of life. You are to enjoy that. We've made a vow in sickness and in health, in richer or poor, till death do us part. We will share the sickness together. We will share the times of stress and anxiety together. Let us also share the grace together, the good things together. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 9, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days, not most, but all the days of your vain life. Why, Solomon? He says, that is your portion in this life. That's your labor under the sun. Not only conversational companionship, but mutual support and trust. You know, it's natural for a companion to want to pick up his companion when his companion falls. You think of the war brothers. When they're out on the field, and one of, you know, your brother gets shot. What's this companion going to do? He's going to try to pick him up and drag him to safety, carry him to safety. The same thing is true in marriage. If one falls, where's the other one? She's going to try to lift him up. He's going to try to pull her up. But it's all based on something. It's based on established trust. The husband trusts his wife. She trusts him. The Shulamite's confidence stems from the fact that while her spouse was away, that he was dependable. Kind of the theme three verses for this whole series is the Song of Songs 6, 1 through 3. When she is asked, you know, by the daughters of Jerusalem, perhaps the queens, perhaps the harem of Solomon, you know, where is your beloved turned? Where is he now? She's like, my beloved has gone to his garden, to the beds of spices, to feed his flock in the gardens, and to gather lilies. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He feeds his flock among the lilies. Notice the two ands. The second and is in verse 3. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. Purely exclusive relationship exists there. There's a healthy dose of possessiveness that's in this marriage. Mutual. Notice the first and. Well, where is he? Well, he's feeding his flock in the gardens. He's a shepherd boy. He's got work that he's doing. We're separated for a spell. I know where he is. But then notice the very end. And to gather lilies. What is she expecting from him? She's expecting a bouquet of flowers when he returns. He's not just out working, but he's going to bring me lilies when he comes home. There is full trust and support there. And it's not silly when a husband brings his wife flowers. That's simply saying, you've been on my mind. That's a good thing. Based on mutual support and trust. I grow my wife roses. And she gives me little chocolates. I think I get the better idea, the better, you know, bargain there. Little chocolates with the little notes in it. Yes, even though we've been married this long, she still does that. And I'm thankful for it. And I'll still grow you roses. But you know what? Mutual trust and support. That's there. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 14, these were some women who had lost their husbands. And so they were younger and had the unfortunate event of losing their spouse early. And the Apostle Paul, being a book that is pragmatic and instructive, the Bible addresses this. And the Apostle Paul tells these younger widows that he desires them to marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. This is the point that I'm trying to make here, is where you have mutual support and trust in marriage, where the woman is busy in the domestic front, and she's conducting herself in a way in which brings no reproach. No adversary can say anything against her. There is a mutual support. The husband, while he's away, knows who she is, and she, while he is away, knows how he is. You can't put a dollar figure on that peace of mind. You can also look at Song of Songs 4, verse 7, and see how he looks at her as having no spot in her. Most of chapter 4 is about his thoughts toward her. So the separation doesn't deny the wife's commitment to him. Her longing is for him when he returns. You know, so strong is her longing for him when he returns. Notice that when she is asleep in chapter 5, verse 2 of Song of Songs, I sleep, but what? But my heart is awake. And what's her heart thinking of? It's the voice of my beloved. He knocks, saying, open for me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one, for my head is covered with dew, my locks with the drops of the night. Even in her sleep, her thoughts are going toward her husband. Why? Because of the mutual trust and faithfulness that exists there. The Shulamite's husband would know that while he is away, she is his. I am his and he is mine. We read of a virtuous woman in Proverbs 31. The heart of her husband safely trusts her so that he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Does him good and not evil all the days. You know, when you look at that Proverbs 31, it kind of accords, does it not, with the First Timothy chapter 5, 13 and 14, where she is busy, she's managing the house, she's at work. You know, Paul warns in verse 13 about the busybody of 1 Timothy chapter 5, and what does a busybody need? A busybody needs a busyness in good things, right? And so what better thing to be busy in than to build up your house? And so the husband safely trusts her when he's doing his work. She safely trusts him. And so we read here in chapter 31 that she's involved in building up her house. But notice in verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. This, in my view, underscores this point all the more. Because if there is a woman who is concerned for the needy, how much more will she be concerned to build up her own house as well? Notice what follows this verse 20. She is not afraid of snow for her what? Her household. For all her household will be clothed with scarlet. And so my argument is, when we see this, it's only natural to see this as well. All of that is work. Is it not? Does she have time to get into trouble? Proverbs 31:27, she watches over the ways of her house and does not eat the bread of idleness. She's not going to be sitting home watching soap operas all day long. I don't know that that's even healthy to watch that garbage anyways. Because you already know what it's about. It's already about this man, this husband, being involved or chasing this other man's wife or vice versa. That's typically what those shows flourish on. And so being engaged in the building up of your house, building up God in your house, these are things that are worthy to be praised. I appreciate how you listened this morning. We have one more point to add to these three. Sacred affection, must be there. It's shown in a lot of different ways. Conversational companionship. She is your companion by covenant. Mutual support and trust. There will be times when you will be separated. But you're really not separated. The thoughts in your hearts are still together. And you're longing for the time when you can be reunited. This is a biblical portrait of where love is in the home. There's happiness and joy. Thank you. We'll be dismissed for our classes at this time.